Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and this is going to be a very fun podcast. I can promise that because I have two of the filmmakers behind the film The Perfect First Date. Watch and see how perfect it is. Did I get that right?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, baby.
By the way, I looked up at your eyes when I said that because that's not in the notes. That was from memory.
Ooh, we made an impact. Yeah.
And The Perfect First Date, it was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival last year in November. And I'll just rattle these off. It just happened to win the Grand Jury Award for Best Short Film Comedy. Got the Grand Jury Award for Best Supporting Actor in a Short Film for Thomas Hobson. And by the way, that award is not genre specific. That's just of all the films, regardless of drama, comedy, art house.
Nice.
They just apparently everyone loved Thomas. And I'll add, it got the Filmmakers Award for Outstanding Performance by a Cast.
Ooh, yeah.
Which fully deserved, I think, because besides the fact that Tommy and Thomas did such a good job as the people on a date, every character who appears, heck, even the director's voice, was a quality performance.
It really made an impact. It really made an impact, Russ.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
But it was a great film. Love the film. I was so glad to see it take home awards. In fact, I did not introduce you guys by name, though, because I'm lame. We've got Tommy Dickey and Chris Hall. Christopher J. Hall in the credits.
Thank you very much.
That's your DGA name, is yes. Christopher J. Hall.
There's a lot of Chris Halls out there on IMDb. I think I'm Chris
Lord.
Hall 24 or something like that.
Something like that.
So at some point, I said, I got to find a way to filter this.
Yeah. I was registering at IMDb, and I was like, oh, my Lord, how do I find the right Chris Hall?
I am Jeff Howard is unfindable. But I think I'm number
there are
seven.
A lot of them?
Yeah, there's so many. It's ridiculous.
There's only one Tommy Dickey on IMDb.
There's
yeah, but we don't miss one podcast. Yeah. Tommy Dickey bragged that he's the only Tommy Dickey on IMDb.
I can't whisper on a podcast? I don't understand.
And by the way, you two co-produced it. Tommy wrote it. Chris directed it. And Tommy is the lead actor of it.
Yes.
And Chris edited it.
Yeah, lots of hats beyond those big
hats. Lots of hats.
I'm sure lots of hats. But excellent film, award-winning, wonderful, and we're here to talk about it. But we're also here to talk about your careers and how you got here. But I almost skipped the fact that The Perfect First Date is on a little smart TV platform called...
Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said... TV High. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV High, as in watchtvhigh.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to @watchtvhigh. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast.
And I might add that the people behind Hi TV are geniuses because it's a streaming platform. Fine, it's me. But it's a streaming platform where all the content is just fantastic films that also just might be a little better if you're high, if you're stoned. Thus, it's called High TV, HITV. So you can learn about it if you go to watchhitv.com. And you know what? Most of the people on this podcast are on the Discover Indie Film TV series on Prime Video, which I will probably hit you guys up about at some point. But you went for High TV first. No offense taken.
No.
Legal in like 30 states now or something that. I mean, it's got to be...
And legal here, January 1st, I think like 8 more came aboard. Like it's just nice.
Cool.
Yeah, if only the Democrats had held the House, we might have gotten a federal legalization. But
right.
We certainly don't want to get into politics.
It amazes me still in the pot conversation how much trouble we used to be afraid of getting into in college when we had pot, and there was like this. It was a dangerous thing to like have. Pot in college.
Yeah.
People got in a lot of trouble for that.
Really?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. We had the cops, the like local cops one time come and like knock on our door. But you know, now anybody can just walk down the street.
Yeah, I think even just a few years later it was a little more chill when I was
Maybe.
In college. Just a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Want me to talk about college in the 80s? No. So anyway.
No.
No one wants to hear about that. But needless to say, yeah, small amounts of I still have not adjusted. Like, I did a pretty good job of introducing Hi TV without guilt, but I still feel like I have to explain that, like, you know, I'm not that into weed. I just
right.
I just do like to take edibles and watch TV because they go together perfectly. So
yes,
I just felt that there should be a streaming service that matched that perfectly. So yeah. I didn't ramble that it's on Roku TV, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, iOS, which is your iPhone, and Android Mobile. So,
wow,
cool.
So you can find Hi TV, I believe, technically, it's every fucking where.
That's the technical term.
The technical term.
It would be like an app you would download.
It's an app you download.
Smart TV, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a smart, and on phones, which it is shocking me how many people watch films on their phones.
Oh, God, man.
It's a travesty. I would never do such a thing.
Like, have you been watching all the Academy Award nominees on the streaming now? I mean, this is the first year they've had all the Academy Award nominees are on the streaming.
Not all of them.
Well, I think, yeah, all of them.
Are all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, like instead of sending out screeners.
The Academy has an app? What?
Yeah, for the, watching the screeners or whatever.
For including, like, the feature films?
Yeah. And it's like, there's a lot of content on there. I'm also a member of the IFP, which you don't have to be like famous to be a member of. Anybody can
What's
do
the IFP?
Indie Feature Project or whatever It's just like they give out the Indie Spirit Awards.
Oh. I thought it was called something. I think I was in that for a
actually,
year.
You dated yourself because that's the original name. So you've been a member a while.
Oh, okay.
Because they rebranded Film Independent.
Film Independent.
I did that for a year. I still think of it as IFB.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
I joined it like when Clerks was out.
Yeah, sure. That was a while ago. Yeah.
So it was Independent Feature Project. And they released, what was it, Indie Filmmaker, the magazine used to be theirs?
Yeah,
I guess they probably don't print a magazine.
Anyway, the Film Independent also has all of their nominees on their streaming app.
Wow.
And I watched the other night, I watched that movie To Leslie that everybody's talking about.
Andrea Riseborough.
No,
I cannot believe she was nominated.
Super controversial because she basically like had all of her BFFs or whatever talk about her. The movie is bleak. It's dark.
Okay.
I mean, it's a powerful performance, but it's one of those movies where it's not quite like watching, like, what's the Darren Aronofsky?
Requiem for a Dream,
okay. Where you have to, like, hide behind your hand or whatever.
Oh, man, that's a rough one, yeah.
But
so good.
It's up there. It's, like, rough.
Is she really great?
It's a once-in-a-lifetime performance, you know?
Okay.
She plays, like, a drunken person whose life is falling apart, a mother of a teenager who the teenager's son kicks her out of his house.
Okay.
By the way, I should add, since we're going on a tangent here, Tommy Dickey has a Instagram account where he goes to the movies, I want to say more than once a week on average.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like two times a week?
Throughout the year, I think I went 62 times last year.
Okay.
So, like, not much more than once a week. But, like, Dickie in the fall, Picks, it's, Dickie like, Picks? Three times a week.
Is it DickiePicks.com?
Yes, is my Oscar prediction website.
And if you want to go on there, you can follow Tommy's opinion of the latest movies of the day. That's true. I have to say, I'm going to say 60 to 70% of the time I agree with, which is pretty high.
Yeah.
Pretty high.
Cool.
Because I find myself having a somewhat idiosyncratic, you know, taste. I don't like everything that everybody else likes.
I agree.
Tar was not great.
It was fine.
It was very hard to sit through. And everybody's obsessed with it.
Did you love
Babylon?
We
did agree. I loved Babylon.
Thank you.
Babylon is great.
I loved Babylon. I think people are insane.
So, like, lovable and just, like, fun.
Just loved every minute.
And everybody's saying, like, oh, it's just about Hollywood. Who's going to watch a movie about Hollywood? But, like, come on. It's so much more than that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. It's a big movie.
It's a big movie. There's a lot going on in there.
It's a big swing.
Yeah.
And each scene is really fleshed out.
Totally.
And beautiful.
The montage where they're shooting the scene with the first sound, running sound.
Yeah. Margot Robbie trying to hit her mark.
And the assistant director losing his shit is so good. It's such a good scene.
Fantastic. Oh, and it runs the gamut of scenes like that to like big sweeping, you know, elephant at a party type scenes.
Well, and like opens with like a guy getting shit on by an elephant. I mean, it's high and low, which is, I think, you know, what you want. You know, like you want to hit all the notes.
Yeah, high and low.
Yeah, there's 81 keys on a keyboard, you know, like, use them. Like,
high and low, like how Triangle of Sadness has vomit, and also, did you see that movie?
I didn't like Triangle of Sadness. Well,
okay, our agreement only goes so far. We're hitting the other 30 to 40%.
We're getting our...
Anyway, Tommy Dickey is the handle on Instagram, and that's the reviews, and Dickey Picks is where I house my Oscar predictions, which today I did pretty well with the Oscar nominations.
Did you rate your picks?
I got 38. I got 38 out of 45. Wow, I've yet to go through. I was teaching all day, so I've yet to go. I haven't gone through to compare to Gold Derby. Okay. I make a spreadsheet every year. I have spreadsheets from the last
38 out of 45. So that's the
top eight categories. Yeah,
okay.
That's a huge percentage.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, where did you miss? What was your surprise? Your biggest shock?
Biggest shock was to Leslie, I would say.
Really?
Her, Amy Riseborough. I missed that. I missed Triangle of Sadness for picture and director. I was so delighted to see it.
Yeah.
I did call that The Whale would not be nominated for screenplay, and I was relieved that it would.
The Whale. Terrible.
I was so relieved it was not nominated for screenplay or picture, and I predicted that it would not be, but I predicted She Said would be nominated instead of it for adapted screenplay, and instead it was Top Gun Maverick. That was a surprise.
Top Gun Maverick screenplay. Beat out She Said for adapted
screenplay? For adapted screenplay, right? You're a little bit like, really? Really?
Wait, how is Top Gun an adapted screenplay? Is it just because it's
a
sequel?
For two reasons. One is that it's a sequel. Every sequel is adapted from its original, which is why Glass Onion is an adapted screenplay.
That.
Yes,
okay,
and Toy Story movies and all that. But the other reason... Had it been nominated for a screenplay award, it would have been for adapted because apparently it was adapted from a newspaper or magazine article.
Oh, interesting. About the Top Gun flight
school. I don't know.
At that point, it's they're destroying the category at that point, right? Yeah. Because everything is inspired by something.
Totally.
So to call that
to
adapted.
Say that the original Top Gun was an adapted screenplay is a stretch.
I mean,
especially with like how much of the original article had like oiled up dudes playing beach volleyball.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
I think that's Tony Scott original right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
craziness. Anyway.
Well, I've allowed you to have this wonderful conversation, but the thing is, you were talking about other people's films, and we want to talk about your work, right?
Oh, we really rambled there, didn't we?
Right? And Chris has done this podcast before with the film Breyer's Cucumber Tostinos, so we're not going to dive into Chris's history, but we do want to dive into Tommy's. You know what? I mean, I know you from this film. I know he's a producer.
Yep.
A writer and an actor. So how'd that all get started?
Oh, boy. Okay, what degree of psychoanalysis from when I was a child are we going to delve into here?
Just lay down on the couch and
take it where it goes. Let's see. So I would say my involvement in film right now, which involves, at least with this film, both creating and acting in it, there's sort of two threads that landed me here. One is my love of watching movies, and one is my enjoyment of performing in general, which more got here through the theater approach, right? So my interest in performing, I'll start with, just through elementary school and then middle school and high school, I found that to be an outlet that I would gravitate towards, partly because I was shy when I was a kid. Would you believe it? Would you believe it? It was true. And I was looking for outlets. And I mean, I could think back to kindergarten when it was like playtime and all the kids were playing sports. And I'm like, let's play dress up. And I would always put on like the lady clothes, which was maybe an indication of my looming homosexuality. Mm-hmm. But I ignored that at the time. But I was less good at sports than the people I was surrounded by. And also definitely less good than my older brother. And I think that, among other things, made me struggle to find an outlet socially. And then acting just became one. you know? And by the way, I'm not that bad at sports. I could kick your butt in tennis, and I play on an Ultimate Frisbee team. But still, comparatively,
Is Ultimate Frisbee a real sport?
Okay, I don't know. Well, that's another podcast we can start.
By the way, my true love is tennis. I've loved tennis all my life.
You might have to have a...
I'm with you. But you're tall. You probably have a good serve.
Decent. It's getting better. Okay, it's one of my weaker things. But
it's all I've got left at this point because my body's broken down.
Sounds like a challenge has been thrown down.
Hey, boom. Yeah.
I think we'd be a good doubles team because I could hit those serves and you would dominate the net. But
I'm in.
But so, decent athlete, but...
Yeah.
I think a lot of actors have the story that they were shy.
Yeah.
And this was an outlet for them to let their personality out.
Yeah. And as a quick aside, I work at a summer camp in Vermont where I direct a musical every summer. And that's one of the things I love is finding those kids that have that same quality where they're looking for a home, you know, and I love helping provide that. And as a kid, that was a thing for me that I needed. And I found it through the theater and I found my home, my people, you know, my way of expressing myself. And that just grew from there and started to meet up with my budding love of film, which I would say began with, I don't know, being a shyer kid who was at home alone, a not small amount of time, loving just sitting on the couch, sucking my thumb and watching television. I won't tell you how long I sucked my thumb for. Okay, till ninth grade. Anyway, that's another podcast. And
we are getting into psychoanalysis.
We are getting into psychoanalysis.
Into it. Okay.
But it did not affect the teeth. The teeth are lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Right? Normally sucking your thumb can fuck up those.
It really can fuck up the buck teeth. It can buck your teeth. Mine are not bucked.
You know what you're doing.
I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I know how to suck my thumb in a way that doesn't buck my teeth. Anyway, that's what I learned as a kid. Okay, I think a big thing also that teed off my love of film is I was obsessed with the Ninja Turtles TV show. When it became a movie, I was like, what? This is what movies can be, you know? And I became a person who would cut out pictures from the newspaper of movies that I was looking forward to seeing or had seen and loved, and I made them just my wallpaper. And that expanded very much. Once I saw Forrest Gump in the theaters in 94, that was the moment when I really realized how much I could love a movie. And boy, did I make a good collage poster of that on my wall. Mm. And if you saw my Truman Show and Pleasantville posters from 1998, when I say posters, I mean, we're talking, like, if you walked into my room, you would think that I was a psychopath who is
a shrine,
like...
A shrine slash,
like, that scene in Seinfeld where Elaine goes to her boyfriend's place and he's a stalker and there are pictures of her everywhere. Like if Hollywood had come over to my house, Hollywood would have been worried about what I was going to do. Like, I was a stalker of them, right? I would cut out every picture and just make the most immense collages. And That was an indication of the degree to which I was falling in love with film.
Let me jump in because I'm failing as my job as a podcast interviewer.
Yeah.
What part of the country were you growing up in?
Massachusetts.
Good to know.
Yep. And in 1998, The Truman Show was supposed to be nominated for Best Picture. Everyone was predicting that. And Jim Carrey, it didn't happen. I was like, what? So I decided to create my own Dickey Awards for who should be nominated and win for these awards. Truman Show got nominated. Pleasantville won. That's my fourth favorite movie of all time. And although Truman Show, oh my God. And I started making these lists, and that's a part of my Oscar prediction website. And in 2014, I started making videos of these, and I still do this. Chris helped me film the last couple of years.
Yes.
Making Oscar parody videos. It became... okay, well, what would a Dickey Awards ceremony be? What if it's me in my living room with a pretend audience of stuffed animals with the faces of the nominated actors printed out and taped on their heads like I'm some sad, crazy person at home alone? And then instead of showing clips from the movies, I act out all the clips with wigs and separate video clips. It's morphed into really just
me parodying. But this story is coming full circle now. We started with Tommy dressing up in girls' clothes as a young boy, and now we're at Tommy dressing up as, you know, whatever female weird characters, best actors nominees,
right.
And putting on all kinds of crazy accents and wigs.
And it's really refined itself into an Oscar parody, featuring some of my favorite things, but it's any movie from the year that I feel like doing a clip of that's in the Oscar conversation, and I do my own little... fun celebration of that film / parody by reenacting it in some creative way.
By the way, just to like again talk about how great Tommy is, Tommy's you were on like the news about it.
Yeah.
It's gotten some actually like kind of legit buzz and fans, even though it is, I will say, completely wacky. I mean, like it is very wacky, very idiosyncratic, specific sense of humor that you've got to have to appreciate it. But it's, you know, like enough people have seen it and gone, there is something weird but brilliant in there, and responded to it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I've got a few write-ups. It's just an extension of my love of film. And I, acting-wise, went to grad school for theater acting, moved out here, and been pursuing film and TV. I've been in some commercials and bit parts in TV, and the Dickey Awards has been one of the things I've done to also feel like I'm creative in this city. And I've always been, you know, thought to myself, I, in addition to the Dickey Awards, would love to make something that's a little more, quote-unquote, legit, and write something for myself. I don't normally gravitate towards writing because I'm far too extroverted to sit in a room and do that, which is why it took me 2 years to get the script ready to film. But I met Chris right at the start of the pandemic, and I had just written a short play and was thinking about making it into a short film. And when COVID really became a thing, a week after meeting Chris, it was like, I guess it's time to make it a short film. And I wrote it partly partly wrote it driven by the love that I have for certain types of art. And we could talk about what inspires us as artists more in a minute, and what ways of approaching art we each are drawn to as viewers, and therefore for me, I'm drawn to make. And that compelled me to make this, as did my interest in writing a role for myself that I would enjoy to play. And those things converged on this film.
Nice.
And I'll add, when you said that, because the way Chris directed it, it's very cinematic, but just hearing that description, it also could be a wonderful stage play.
Yeah.
Like it could play out for an audience perfectly. Like, you do make the camera the audience.
Right.
But, I mean, it's great cinema. But, yeah, there is something very vibrant about it. And, obviously, it's shot in real time because it's the mockumentary vibe.
Right. Right.
Wasn't shot in real time, but it's
no. But it's like the story is told,
in a real time kind of way. Yeah,
it's like this is 12 minutes of
it
these
took
people's
us
lives.
14, 18 hours to shoot.
Yeah,
but,
like 16 hours I was there. Yeah. Oh, that was a long day, but a great day.
Yeah.
And how did you two happen to meet?
We actually, our dads were college roommates. And they have been
roommates, right?
I think they were roommates, right?
I believe it. I
think they were.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that. But they were good friends in college, which they graduated in like 1962.
63. I think. Yeah.
And then they've stayed in touch and seen each other at the Yale college reunion of boys.
Yeah.
You know, go to Yale. And so I think they ran into each other in 2019 or something like that.
Right.
And my dad said, hey, I want you to meet my friend's son, Tommy. Go meet him for lunch sometime. And I was like, oh God, this is going to be, this is going to be a nightmare. But then we ended up meeting up, and I think we both felt like pleasantly surprised and charmed at how much we actually had in common. And so I think, you know, I will add that sometimes when I tell that story, it sounds like we're like two Nepo babies who met when our dads like had lunch together. But I think the funny side of the story is, although our dads are very smart guys who went to Yale, neither of them have anything to do with Hollywood whatsoever.
Are
about from Hollywood as could possibly be.
Which is part of why I was like, is this going to be worth it? Because normally when my dad is like, you got to meet so-and-so, it's like someone's neighbor's cousin has a friend that like once held a gaffe for who knows who. You know what I mean? And it's like, why am I doing this?
Does your dad ever like call you when he's meeting somebody and say, I want you to talk to this kid, and then hand the phone to the random person that he doesn't know, and then you have to talk to the stranger?
That's happened.
That never happens to me, I swear.
Okay, so both of you get that.
It's the dads that, through their lack of familiarity with our work, are just like striving to find a way to be helpful, which is endearing.
I think that's true.
It's endearing.
Yeah. They want to help.
But in this case, it was helpful and cool.
In this case, it was helpful, and it turned out into a great collaboration and friendship. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, this project, you talk about it as having started out writing it as a short play, and I think that is illustrative of the fact that, like, the success that this project has kind of found in, we've gotten into, like, I think 8 or 9 festivals now.
Yeah,
right? I think
9, yeah.
And so this was not something that was hatched in a lab in a Sundance Institute or something that really had a careful film festival strategy thought out for it. It was really just this kind of funny stage play that Tommy had written, and we said, well, how can we adapt it to the world post-COVID or whatever?
Right, right.
How can we turn this into something that works for us and works for the audience? And I think we, you know, seem to have successfully done that. I feel like we achieved that.
Yeah, and used the form.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's like when I imagined it as a play, I imagined it as a different experience of, like, all right, grab a stranger from the audience and you know, like, make it more like we are here experience, like, witnessing this date up, you know, live, up close and personal. And with film, it was more, okay, how do we relate to the camera? How do we have the camera and the crew be a character in this, right? And how does the other character in this, not to give away what it's about or how much we'll talk, I don't know, whatever, but, you know, how do the two main characters on this date relate to the technicality around
them? I'll just keep riffing, and sorry that we're, like, taking your job as an interviewer away here, but sometimes Tommy and I think we just get going. But the thing about the short was, you could tell on page one, he's breaking the fourth wall. And it was like, this is clearly like a bold kind of stylistic choice. And I thought it was the kind of thing that you can do in a film, but also it's not easy to pull off all the time, you know? And I think I liked that idea of, this is not an easy film. Like, this is a film that you've got to really do this right to pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt like a cool challenge to be a part of. And it was definitely the kind of thing editorially in the edit where we had some choices to make about how to kind of, like, hit that moment when I'll give the quick, you know, pitch of what the short is.
Yeah.
Is it's a short where two men meet for the first time for a first date in a restaurant, and actually fairly quickly, I was going to say slowly, but fairly quickly, one realizes that the other is having the date filmed, and the reasons for that date being filmed are not very clear, and chaos ensues.
To that other actor at first.
Chaos ensues.
It's clarified in the script, of course.
Yeah, and so I think, you know, there's a push and pull between one character wants to just get up and leave and say, why am I staying here? And the other character, Tommy's character, convinces him, pulls him back and says, come on, let's just, like, play. Let's just try it. What's the worst that could happen?
Right.
What have you got to lose, I think is the line.
Yeah.
And so he stays. And I think there's just, like, a lovely human moment there that also felt like something that was, it's got a kind of absurd comedy humor to it that I really like and gravitate. It feels really funny in moments. The audience laughs. It's really, like, an enjoyable comedy. But then also there's a moment or two where you feel like these are real people and not just thinly drawn characters. You know,
they're
people with emotions and a heart. And I think if you can do that in a short, that feels like, you know, you've really hit the grand slam of, like, all those kind of things in one. So, yeah, I was into it.
I have a tendency of taking an idea that I have and just splatting every possible tentacle that this idea could have down on paper and not yet knowing how to editorialize it. And my first draft was 18 pages with no moments of heart. And Chris was really great at seeing what works and helping me massage it down to 12 pages, including 2 to 3 moments of heart. You know what I mean? And figuring out the right shape of it.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Yeah, it was a great process. And the last thing I'll say, and then Jeff will let you ask a question. But, you know, like, I think this short and the other short that I was on the pod for last year, Briar's Cucumber Tostinos, were both shorts where there was like a long development time. You know, I think the pitfall a lot of shorts, and I personally have fallen into with shorts, is you write something, you think, okay, it's done, and then you don't really get the time and the feedback to like develop it and figure out what's working and what's not. And right. So that time and that process has really been valuable and a big part of, I think, why both of those shorts ended up working really well.
Cool. And they're both shorts of depth. Like, they're comedy, but there's layers to them. Yeah. And I was going to add Perfect First Date. I was just going to say, I don't think it's spoilable. Not that I want us to share any of the details of the film.
Right.
Because the way it's told, and as Chris said, the humanity of both characters, it's the wonderful balance of an extremely insane situation with an over-the-top character, and yet it's all very human and very down-to-earth at the same time. Like, we understand why he's doing this. So
yeah.
I don't even think you, and there's nothing you can say to spoil this film, because, heck, I've watched it multiple times, and it's old. I think you laugh a little more each time.
Thank you.
I'm so happy to hear that. Heartwarmed.
And I don't have to ask questions here. This podcast is supposed to be a conversation. That's why they're fun to listen to. But it is interesting to know that how it came together, and that Chris was involved on the development side for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it made me just want to throw a jab at your dads. Why, if they went to college together, why did you not meet until 2020?
Good question. I think they lost touch for a little while.
Maybe.
Right?
Yeah.
And or just they were not each realized. I don't think either of them was aware that the other one had a son also in LA working in the industry. Even if they were in touch. They just hadn't talked about that.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, like, kismet or whatever, it ends up turning out that we've had many weird coincidental friendships in common.
Yeah.
Rory Mitchell and
Bob Kundrat.
Bob Kundrat at Brentwood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a small town, you know?
Totally.
And I'm reminded of that fact all the time, where you're working in this business, you meet somebody, and you just... Yeah. It doesn't take that long into the conversation before you realize, wow, we have a lot of totally random people in common.
And we both went to the same theater program in Connecticut, the Eugene O'Neill Theater Center, the National Theater Institute, for a semester away.
25 years ago, whatever that was. Yeah, my God.
So we come from similar theater aesthetic backgrounds.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
We shared some... talk about over the top. Some of the teachers at that program were larger than life.
Yes.
You know, and I think it was, we were both theater majors in college.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I think my theater major college education, mainstream kind of college degree was like a great time. I loved all of the work that we went into that, but very little of it felt like a practical education in the world of how to be working in theater in any way, shape, or form, and working as an actor. But the NTI program was highly practical and intensive, and was taught by a lot of actually working directors and actors and performers and musicians and dancers and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And it felt like we came out of that a really tight bond of friends who were in the program with you, some of which I'm still are some of my best friends, and a totally like practical, thorough education in this is where you're going to land on your feet or fall when you get to town.
Right, right. Know? Risk fail, risk again was their motto.
Yeah,
and I agree. Practical, but also wildly creative and inspiring, right? Like almost every teacher I had there gave us a mix of very practical, concrete things that we could use in our lives technically, but also just seemed to be nutty people with nutty and awesome, just unique visions that, and they would just inspire us to just like take our perspective and put it askew a little bit and play. I love that.
And Chris, were you there for acting?
Well, it was a theater program, and I applied for a spot as a director, and I was there as a quote-unquote director, but it was a theater program, so everybody was required to act all the time. And it was, you know, it was just part of what you were, everybody was in that
pool. Yeah, did you do anything differently than the actors?
No, I think I did have one opportunity as like the final project to direct a one act.
Oh, cool.
And this, like, I won't totally gross you out, but I had this. Oh, okay, fine. I had this short that was written by one of the other students that I loved and thought was amazing. And she wrote a short one act that took place inside of her womb.
Oh my God.
Inside of her uterus.
Oh my God.
So
how did you stage?
So I was assigned to stage that, and I was psyched about it. I was thrilled. So I created like a latex swimming pool in the middle of the stage filled with lube.
In the DMT or the DMB or the barn, which theater space?
The temperature in the theater like as high as possible. Okay. I wanted to make sure I could get a place that I could heat really hot.
Yeah.
And we had like cans of tuna that we heated up so that it would make a horrible smell. Oh, it was
my
it
God.
Was hilarious. But people were rolling. Oh. I mean, it was people were they thought that it was the
greatest.
I was waiting for the gross part because none of that was gross till you got to the fact that you chose to have the room smell like tuna.
Yeah.
It was so good.
The lube made sense
and
the
so
pool,
good.
The room, nothing was gross.
It made it a sensory
until you
experience.
Until you wanted to be a smelly play.
It was a sensory experience. And people loved it.
Wow.
We went too far and it was well received. So.
We had no tuna scenes in my time.
Well,
I don't have a parallel story here.
There you go.
But wow.
But that also makes you one of those directors who has given a little time, even though it wasn't your focus. You did some acting, which probably is helpful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of acting. I think if you're a theater major, it comes with the territory. Yeah. And I was always terrified as an actor. Mm. And any role that I had that was like not a small role, I would have nightmares about remembering all the lines. But... yeah, I had to do it a few times. And at Kenyon, won an acting award as a senior, the Paul Newman Award. So that was kind of cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I was about to ask for the names of both colleges because you both kind of skipped that.
Oh, yeah.
I went to Kenyon in Ohio in a cornfield in the middle of Ohio.
Amazing.
And
I went to Dartmouth next to a river in the middle of, well, the river's on the border of New Hampshire.
Yeah.
College in the middle of New Hampshire.
I think that was like a different moment when college, like people were, I felt like we went to these like amazing experiences, these colleges that were.
I had the time of my life.
Yeah, dude, I fucking rocked it.
Yeah.
And nowadays I think people would think about going to a place like that and it just sounds more expensive than it's worth in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
The value proposition of going to one of those like Ivy League colleges is like, is that really worth it anymore?
I don't know.
It's,
I don't know.
Maybe it is. Maybe I'll have a different opinion when my kids are going to college.
Yeah, yeah. I loved it.
No, higher education, that's a whole topic we don't have to deal with. But things have changed.
Yeah.
Things have really changed.
Yeah.
All right, so what else? See, I've gotten out of the habit of even being involved here.
Sorry, Jen. You are an important part of this.
You
wouldn't be here without
you.
My life partner often says to me, I hope you don't talk much during these podcasts. I'm like, I got nothing to say. I'm just listening. But you reached this point. So you did this film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you worked on it together for 2 years and then shot it?
Yeah,
Tommy did all the work. I just read,
Sent him a draft.
Yeah.
I basically, wrote a draft. He gave me some notes. I worked on it. I sent it back to him and to some other friends and whatnot. And the thing is that I like getting feedback from a few different places to kind of mull over all the different, lenses of ideas that are coming my way. But I don't love to just immediately sit and do those notes because I'm a busy man.
Are we all?
Yeah. So I would get notes and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Yep, I'll get to that. And then 6 months would go by. And then I'd do them. in a day and then send the notes to whoever, and then another 6 months would go by.
Well, you've got to wait for the muse.
Yeah, wait for the muse. Inspiration. And, yeah, just a few other things in my life that just kept consuming me.
Right. It wasn't 2 years of weekly meetings and pounding it out. It was a week's worth of work over 2 years.
Yes.
Well, we didn't know each other.
A week's worth of work, maybe.
We really didn't know each other before we, like, shot. I mean, I think we developed a friendship through working on this project.
Yep.
Then we had the shoot, the day of the shoot.
Right.
And I think, you know, the process of making this short has really, like, made us friends.
Right.
But we didn't, you know, and I think maybe that's, like, the story of this podcast is, like, you know, independent film.
It's yeah.
Like a nice way to make friends.
Too, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know? You helped me with the Dickie Awards 2 years in a row.
And that the Dickie was like, Awards, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was like, you know, one day, like a month after I met you, I feel like.
Maybe, yeah.
And then one day a year later.
Yeah.
When we shot the film.
Yeah. And both of the times that we've shot the Dickie Awards, shooting in your house, I will say I got to see like real behind the curtain kind of look at the real Tommy Dickie that probably most people don't get on like the second time they meet.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
I mean, we've had a shot of you sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
We've had a shot of you with very few clothes on a few times, I think. The first time we had a shot of you dressed up as the nurse, the female nurse.
Yes, from Promising Young Woman,
which was a memorable
me
look.
Just hobbling down my sidewalk in heels and he's following me with a camera and I'm like, yep, my neighbors are used to it, Chris. Don't worry about it.
There's a shocking lack of nudity in The Perfect First Day.
Yeah, there's no nudity. Yeah. Need a rewrite. How can we get nudity?
Our sequel.
Involved? Yeah, mm-hmm. Sequel.
The Perfect First Second Hookup.
Oh! And as we learned, the sequel will officially be an adapted screenplay.
Ah, yes.
Indeed.
Full circle. Yep. Indeed.
So it does sound like this inspired you to keep working together, like you, besides the Dickie Awards. Like,
well, just... we just had a dinner where we finally had our families together, and we had the dads and us all sit down for dinner that was very civilized.
Yeah.
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 And, you know, yeah, we've been kind of starting to think about exchanging ideas or scripts or whatever to see who knows where the world might take us. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I think having worked in this business for a while, both Tommy and I, and worked on a number of projects and, you know, some terrible and embarrassing and others like really exciting and positive. I think there are, sometimes when you work on a project, collaborate with someone, especially someone new that you don't know that well, and you walk away from the experience feeling like, oh, like I would put myself in that person's hands again, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I feel certainly like we've walked away from this project feeling like I would kind of go down whatever path Tommy wants to go down. You know, I think like we could safely and confidently feel like, hey, we could go down that journey together without necessarily knowing where it's going to end up, but we're going to get to a good place.
Totally. Yeah. And I feel safe in your hands, helping me shepherd my crazy brain through to some place that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you should, because as you, Chris, alluded to it, but as an outsider, because you were talking about yourself, I mean, it was a very challenging thing to direct, for sure, because you watch, besides the coverage and the number of people on that set and the number of characters you're introducing us to for moments. But I mean, as you said, like, you didn't say this, but you implied there were a million ways for it to go wrong.
A million.
And it doesn't. Yeah, so, right. I mean, that really is like golf clap for director Christopher J. Hall, because...
Yeah.
Not many indie directors, like this was a minefield, actually, of filmmaking, and you made it right through.
Well, we did. We had also, I can't let this go without throwing out the praise and you know, full credit to a great crew, which was a small crew of like, I want to say 10 or 12 people or something like that. I mean, it was a small crew. But we had a solid group of people who are kind of working pros and know what they're doing. A lot of people who are kind of, we have our great cinematographer, Rachel Dusa, who shot Briars Cucumber Tostinos and works as a first AC on kind of big Hollywood HBO level shows and projects and things like that.
And she killed it. She
crushed it, and her team has crushed it. She's one of those people that I try to keep working with as often as possible, because I think 5 years from now, she's going to be shooting like big studio movies or whatever. So it's good to be on her radar. And then also the cast, you know, this was a short where we had like, two really main characters, but then a number of other kind of key characters, all of whom had to be cast and like the characters developed to them. Sue Kate plays the waitress who comes in and out. Sorry, Sue Kate Heaney plays the waitress who comes in and out and delivers, you know, various ridiculous lines and helps Tommy's character through this date. And, you know,
she was 8 months pregnant.
She was very pregnant.
And had to rush out in the middle of the day for a fitting for a job she shot like the next day. She's like driving across city during our lunch break.
But so pregnant that she had to be like sitting down most of the time. Yeah. She wasn't working.
Yeah.
Because she was like ready
very
to pop.
Pregnant.
Yeah. And you rewrote the character so that she could be like, why did you have this person do it? And there's a great line in the short about having a pregnant friend do this.
You picked a pregnant person to be the waiter? She's the only friend who's willing to do this. Right.
Yeah, so we had a great crew, great cast, supporting cast, and, you know, all the praise to those people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And back in terms of collaborating with each other, Chris and I don't always agree on everything, but we...
As evidenced by the beginning of the
spot. Yeah. But we, I think our artistic senses are well aligned enough that we like, you know, we feel good that we're like heading in the same direction. And when we do disagree on the tiny things, we are good at communicating, like, why do you like what you prefer? Why do I like what I prefer?
Yeah.
You know, and who feels more strongly, or like what, you know, what makes sense given that. And I think we're really good at clarifying why our taste is instructing us for a certain thing, and good at hearing each other out and letting, letting the wisest opinion come forward, you know?
Yeah.
And you're not same-brained. In fact, you're very complimentary, I think. I think your skill set, like, if I was a basketball coach, I'd be like, okay, I've got the point guard and I've got the center. Like you're not doing the same things, and yet you have a similar sensibility, a sense of the absurd, absurdity of humanity.
Yeah.
Absurdity of humanity. It's a story, it's a short that is, you know, like, on the surface of it, you really have to suspend the disbelief when you're walking into this situation. Yeah. But at the same time, I think we're doing a lot of work to try to kind of earn back the audience's trust from the get-go. And so hopefully there's a balance there where you're kind of playing with, this is bigger than life. You know, I mean, I personally, we're talking about movies that you like and all that kind of stuff. I love a movie that goes to some theatrical moment, you know, where something larger than life happens, something, whether, you know, it's Avatar is like the obvious, where the whole movie is larger than life, or something totally small and human and indie, like The Perfect First Date, where there's, you know, a moment in there where you're building around, where somebody says, you're having this whole date filmed, and then decides to stay and go with it, you know? Mm-hmm. That is a great kind of theatrical moment where you're able to convince Tommy's character to like, hey, just go with it. Because I think in reality, like, you'd have to be crazy to stick with that, you know? I think people who are on reality shows are always crazy.
They're all insane. You know, they're all just crazy.
Why do you sign up for this knowing what is going to happen,
right?
And then, you know, get drunk, take off all your clothes, end up in the jacuzzi. It's obvious what's going to happen, but people do it anyway.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
I think that's one of the other things I love about it is you didn't go to the place where, right, the reality thing is the reason why people are willing to get drunk and hop in that jacuzzi and embarrass themselves for life. And I have friends who are on The Bachelor.
Oh boy.
Who should be embarrassed for life.
Yes.
For what they're known for, but I won't name them. But, you know, it's their fame whores. The goal is to, and actually, Tommy's character, his goal is not to be famous. In theory, his goal really is to fall in love, and he's just trying to make dating work. And Lord knows, everyone I know who still dates, thankfully I haven't had to go on a date for a couple decades, but it's tough. It's one of the toughest things human beings go through.
Yeah, I had a date on Friday night.
You had a date on Friday night?
I did.
How did it go?
It was fine.
Fine. Fine. No second date. It was not the perfect first date.
It was all right, though. He loved movies. We talked about Oscars and movies like the whole time.
Okay, so can we do a dating tangent for a minute?
Yeah.
So are you on the apps?
Oh, yeah.
I had a conversation with my brother the other day, who is way hipper and cooler than I am. I, like you, Jeff, have not dated in like a long time.
Yeah.
Decades. But nowadays, everybody is meeting your boyfriend or girlfriend on an app.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, it's just not a, it's not rare, unusual. It is the common thing nowadays. Yep. And I think that is kind of amazing in a good way, but also like kind of weird, you know?
Yeah.
And like a dystopia situation where on the one hand, you're able to connect with people and choose people in some important ways. In theory, you're attracted to what they look like on their picture. In theory, you have some kind of basis for common interests that you're able to pick. So it's not like you're just dating the guy who works at the local 7-Eleven where you
buy, expands your reach.
You know, cigarettes on midnight.
Yeah.
It's like this is putting you into a category where you're able to find people who theoretically have things in common with you and might be a good match. But also, like, man, just, it's so awkward. It just seems so awkward.
It is a little like you're starting from zero in terms of what there is to talk about, right? Because it's not like, oh yeah, wasn't that a cool party we met at? And isn't so-and-so our mutual friend, like, so quirky? Like, there's not that starting point. But I don't know. I'm chatty enough with new people that I'm able to hack through that.
Yeah.
Find someone to talk about.
Did you ever have your mom set you up on a date?
No.
Because it feels to me like going on a, like a Tinder date is always going to feel like that.
It's like some,
that's amazing. Let me tell you what my mom thinks of your family or something like that.
No, it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of like, it's very bizarre to meet someone for the first time on a date because part, at least for me, part of my brain is consumed and distracted by just the new information of how they seem to think and talk and like move as a human gesturing in space, you know?
Yeah.
And you read a lot through that. And I'm just like sizing them up while also just trying to remain present in what they're saying. And that's hard.
Yeah.
Well, and the other tough thing about it is the fact that everyone's on the app, which means everyone does have 5 to 11 dates that week, right?
Right.
Like everyone, it's harder to pick an item off the menu at the Cheesecake Factory where there's 79 or 150 items.
Yeah.
Then when you're at like Fat Burger, like, well, I'm going to have, what size burger am I getting?
Right.
Like
it's Fat Fries or Skinny Fries. Yeah. I love Fat Burger.
If you don't get Fat Fries, then I don't know what to say.
What are you really doing? Yeah.
I don't have a clear preference on my fry size.
No, but the thing is, like, that is a lot of options to choose from, right?
I'm on like 8 dating apps.
Wow. How many dates a week are you on average doing?
How
many dates a month are you doing on average?
One
a month?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
on average?
I feel like I would be tired of, like, the anticipation, setting it up.
If I had more time, I would totally do a couple a week.
Sure.
Well, one a week, maybe. Right. Yeah. Because it is a lot of, like, it can feel like a waste of time talking to someone you may never see again.
Yeah.
You know? There are first dates where 1 minute or 3 seconds in, I'm like, well, this will be a waste of my next 2 hours.
Right. The guy shows up wearing a MAGA hat or something like that.
Yeah, that or just, like, the way they, you know, exist in space. I'm like, no. Yeah.
Or the level of dishonesty in their profile.
Yeah, sometimes that. Sometimes they look nothing like their pictures.
Do you have a worst date story?
Oh, to tell? My God, I do.
Okay.
Well, it's not so bad as you might interpret from how quickly I was like, yes. But this guy, oh my Lord, he knocked on my door. I invited him to meet me at my house. To then go to Korean barbecue around the corner. Okay. But I was like, it's around the corner. So why don't you
in there? Yeah. Invite the first date to your house.
He seemed like a weird dude from the apps, which so my calculus was, I'm probably not going to want a second date, but he looks cute enough that I think I'm going to want to have fun. So have him, you know, park near my home. So why don't you just like come to my home? It just makes it more likely that we come back to my home.
Okay.
If that's where we start.
It's a booty call from the get go.
Yeah. Now I have the screen door closed and the big door open. So I hear he rings the doorbell and I start walking towards the door. And as I'm approaching, I hear him through the screen door say, "Hello." I can't. The combination of like my inability to replicate it and poor memory at this point, it's been a couple of years. I can't perfectly do his voice.
That was pretty good.
But it was,
I got the impression. It was
creepy and weird.
Yeah.
And I open the door and he looks very creepy, cannot make eye contact to save his life. And he's wearing pants with like mini like light bulbs or something sewn into his jeans. There are like 15 on each pant leg. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And we go and sit at Korean barbecue and he basically doesn't look at me the whole time because he's so awkward. And when he talks, his voice is excruciating. And when he's not talking, he's doing this really weird thing with his mouth where he's just like doing some weird ass thing with his mouth and tongue.
Yeah.
That's like an awful tic that I cannot look at. So I either can't look at his face or can't hear his voice. And I'm trying to navigate that for an hour or so before I had an excuse and said I wasn't feeling well and left. That's like the most, like, I gotta get out of here I've ever been on a date, but I still gave him an hour. And at one point, oh my God, I mentioned helping my sister before she gave birth. And I was like, yeah, like a year and a half ago, I was helping my sister with whatever, whatever. And I swear, moments after saying it was a year and a half ago, he's like, oh, has she had her child yet? I was like... I was like, I have sympathy for people who maybe don't hear every word that I say, but it was pretty clear that this was a year and a half ago. Who are you? My sister's not an elephant. Is that the animal that's pregnant for over a year and a half? I can't remember.
Oh,
some
I
animal.
Know.
I told the story to someone and they told me some.
He sounds a little spectrum-y.
He was, So maybe I'm just an asshole describing someone on the spectrum in a rude way. But yeah, that voice was unbearable.
It sounds like our next short is developing in front of our eyes, right?
This very imperfect first date.
The worst first
date. The worst first date. Yes. Yeah.
That's a pair of shorts right there. Yeah.
Yep. Agreed. As long as you stick to the ethos that you have absurdity in a very... Because both shorts that I've seen of Chris's, there are absurd characters surrounded by normality. And it's a nice balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you will do another short. It's you've committed now. You've set it on a podcast.
Yes, we're now committed.
I've started pre-brainstorming, I'll call it, about which is warming up my brain to brainstorm. What it could be as a series, you know?
Oh, yeah, it could be a series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just continuing on with these two characters and seeing what happens in second and third dates, or maybe it's something else. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so many different options it could be.
Totally.
Sue Kate, after our screening, we were at the after hang at the Boneyard bar, and she had all sorts of ideas of...
Oh, nice.
She's an idea machine. I wrote some down.
Yeah.
What other kind of quirky things that we could... You know, things like I get a flash mob to come, you know, help them... give my, you know, my now boyfriend, we will say, some sort of pick me up after or as a celebration of a promotion at work or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, maybe a proposal, but that would be a later episode, wouldn't it? But some kind of like, I get a flash mob for a completely unnecessary reason. And so I guess it wouldn't be a proposal. And something goes wrong. It's just, you know, sort of me having ideas that are like above, you know.
Yeah.
Extreme, and he grounds me.
I worked on one of those flash mob videos one time.
Yeah.
It was It's a lot of preparation that goes into that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I guess filming a flash mob would be expensive.
No, I don't mean it in a like, oh, that's expensive way.
Right.
But I just mean like those kind of dumb viral videos that everybody was trying to make.
Yeah.
Man, it was so much work to prepare and produce that. And at the end, it just felt like a cheesy ad, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, wah, wah, the whole thing was over and gone. But, it was Cricket Wireless that paid us a lot of money to produce a flash mob video. And that was like a fad for a while. People were making those on the subway in New York, right? I mean, like, maybe the flash mob moment has passed, but I don't know. Maybe we could bring it back.
I mean, I think everything has passed and nothing has passed. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Fair. It's like, it's no longer a thing we talk about all the time, but because it's still probably happening here and there.
It's actually a secondary observation, which is, I believe, telling Chris that Breyer's Cucumber Tostinos felt a bit like a pilot because, of course, the ending definitely leaves the audience wanting more.
Yeah.
And perfect for a state in a way you're already saying, like, turn into a series. Like, it. You kind of have a pilot vibe to you. Your stuff, I guess it's with the depth and the interest level.
Sure.
It's a story that wants to be told. And then I just have to throw out four words. The perfect first wedding. Just saying.
First wedding implies that there are going to be future weddings.
Yeah.
I believe everyone needs a first marriage to...
Sure.
Everyone needs a first marriage.
Yeah. Well, I'm flattered at the compliment of the TV show... of it all. And I think, I mean, look, the as much as I think indie film is a, you know, fence I'm willing to die on, or what's the expression that I'm using?
The hill.
Yeah, thank you. That I'm willing to die on. Yeah. I think indie film is fence. A passion that, you know, just feels like a great playground full of fascinating people, incredibly cool projects, awesome, you know, scene to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is the business is TV, you know, and that's where the money has been for a long time. And I think if you're thinking about getting into this business as a young filmmaker watching this or listening to this, I mean, you know, coming up with an idea that is like a series, that's how you make money and stick with it in this business. So, if we're interested in turning this into something that we don't just pay for.
Right. I think with series, it's like, that's not our money at that point. Yeah. So it's, how do we capture the right idea and pitch it?
Yeah.
Well, I've got to find some wood to knock on because, part of my dream is that this high TV sucker will get the subscribers. And then maybe Perfect First Date will actually, it's a generous setup, I believe, high TV. I don't know if I shouldn't talk about finances on a podcast, but let's just say half goes to the filmmakers. So it is obviously my dream that like people actually get to make a profit off a short for the first time in recorded history. And then be encouraged like, well, shit, we could do a follow-up short.
Yeah.
And then once you do like a handful of follow-up shorts, I believe you have a series.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it would be.
It's hard. I mean, the shorts, I've done probably 10 shorts, you know, and I think the thing about shorts that you have to know going into it is you're never going to make a dime on the whole thing.
Right.
The whole purpose is to spend the money and to just like, show off what you can do, try to use it as an audition piece, try to just like develop your talent and your skills more. All of those are totally valid, good reasons to do it, but you can't go into a short ever thinking this is going to make you money in any way. So I think that idea of finding a way to make money on shorts, there's just a whole company of Quibi that like was... valued at like $1 billion that said they're going to make money on shorts. And I think one of the problems was it just approached it from a very kind of corporate mindset of like Jeffrey Katzenberg coming in and like, I'm going to make so much money on all these little filmmakers. But I think, you know, approaching it from a indie filmmaker kind of sensibility, is much more fits with the ethos, with the kind of like personality of the scene. And it's a great dream to go for, you know, doing shorts, because I think it fits the audience. People right now, it's hard to get people to sit still for an hour. It's hard to get people to sit still and watch something for 30 minutes. You know, a short can be 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe. And that's very digestible for people on their phone or wherever, kind of, you know, in how many years from now are we going to have self-driving cars or whatever?
Just
be chilling all the time in your traffic and watch it a little short.
I'll watch The Perfect Third Date, episode 3.
Yeah. And we'll in that car, we'll have our VR visor.
Yes.
So it'll feel like we're inside a theater.
Ooh.
That'll be cool.
Oh, I think visors will get to the place that it feels as high quality as sitting in an arc light.
Have you ever tried that visor thing?
No.
Do you know Rory Mitchell has a whole company now? It's amazing.
I've put on a pair of Rory goggles for whatever.
A project with their.
I don't know if you call them Rory goggles, but I watched the 3D thing that
they made.
Yeah.
The play that they shot on VR and
the one that Martha wrote.
It was
people
very cool.
Like, what are they talking about?
Also had some like X-rated sex moments in it or whatever.
I liked
but it felt like bold, daring, you know, like edgy. But also like a totally new radical technology.
Yeah.
That you walk out of that experience and you go, holy shit, that was crazy. And I mean, especially a sex scene where, you know, the camera is like right next to these actors as they're having sex. I mean, simulating whatever, but, you know, like it's a whole different way of experiencing a story, a character, drama, you know, an arc and all of that, and kind of through that VR lens, if it's done well, it's pretty radically cool. And just so unlike anything that we've experienced before as human beings. It's amazing.
It was like, it was 360. Was it kind of 3D-ish as well?
Maybe not 3D-ish, but 360 VR.
I'm trying to remember. Because definitely the vibe of it. It's different than like sitting in a movie theater in terms of how the quality
looks. So different, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know a guy, I know a director who's done this podcast, and I just distracted myself. Before COVID, I would actually do an Oscar predictions podcast, and then and then the week after the Oscars, rate everyone's scorecards.
Ah, cool.
So I don't know. You're already doing stuff like that. I think you would crush. But anyway, this director was telling me how he has the VR headset, and he has a theater on it where he like looks in the theater and there is a movie screen that he watches a movie on, but you can actually like look over at the side and see the speakers along the walls. Like, you know, sometimes while you're watching a movie in the theater, you're like, oh yeah, there's the speakers. Like, he's like, you can do that sitting at home.
What?
It's amazing.
Oh God.
Yeah.
I feel both like excited and horrified by that.
And because of who I am, I have to mention that obviously all new technology has to be pioneered by the pornography industry. That is where it has to start. Everything starts with porn. And I believe there's a lot of VR porn coming.
I'm sure somebody's making it.
There's a demand.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
It's called a love story.
What love? That's real love right there.
Well, excellent. Well, should we move along? Do you guys want to you want to name questions? You've already named some stuff.
Yeah, well,
but you want to name your social media and whatnot?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't make clear when we were setting up is that we do wrap it up and we close and then we start recording again for the four questions.
Oh.
Okay.
Well, because otherwise the four questions is like, you know, an hour plus in. So it's its own little podcast. It's separate.
Got it.
Okay, he's got a whole
I was wondering cuz I'm helping myself.
Yes. Okay.
I failed you in the intro, actually.
Whatever.
Before we started recording, I have a set explanation, and I was enjoying your company so much, I failed to explain what we were doing here.
Thank you.
Oh, good. Social media.
Social media.
Oh, my Lord. Go ahead, Tommy. Tommy Dickey. That's Tommy with a Y, Dickey with an IE. I mean, I'm on Facebook, but that's random for strangers, so forget that. Instagram, Tommy Dickey. TikTok Tommy Dickey. I tried it for the Dickey Awards last year. Do you do Twitter anymore? Twitter, I have Tommy Dickey. I have not opened it in about a year.
Yeah, I don't do Twitter anymore.
I never liked it.
Yeah,
and
me neither.
Now I'm like, that plus Elon Musk, right. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
So really Instagram and then like TikTok if you want to see if I ever do anything more on there. And YouTube channel, Tommy Dickey, and TommyDickey.com. It's all Tommy Dickey all the way down. I'm done.
I'm just on Instagram at The Real Christopher Hall, and I'm on Facebook. But I watched that documentary during COVID called The Social Dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately said, I'm not going on Facebook anymore. Mm-hmm. So I didn't like delete my account, but it was a movie that I watched, a documentary that I was like, this is totally stunning, shocking, and convincing, and almost felt like it was telling me something that I already knew. Like,
right.
The social media is an addiction. It's not good for you. It's really, like, started with all these kind of promises of changing the world and making the world a better place. And then there was that moment where you could, like, connect with all the people from your high school class, and that was so exciting. And then it's just all been downhill from there.
Yeah, I know.
And then your uncle starts going on the Trump train and posting about it. And pretty soon it's just like, oh God, why am I still on this thing?
Yeah, there's a lot of downsides to it. But I keep a healthy relationship to my social media, I feel like.
Yeah, you do a good social media.
I ignore it a lot.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention also DickyPicks.com, PICKS, mind the K. If you don't include the K, you might get something else.
DickyPicks.com feels like you're very dangerously close to some other kind of material.
And yet, at school, I cannot go. I can go to DickyPicks.com at this school that I teach at.
Yeah.
But I cannot go to TommyDickey.com.
Oh.
Because of, I assume because of the my dick back-to-back from the Tommy Dickey. That's our theory, but it literally gets flagged as pornography, which happened in front of my class once. I was trying to show them, like, my commercial reel or whatever, and they were like, pornography? What, Mr. Dickey? I was like, it's not really pornography, I promise. But I can't prove it because I can't go to the website. But anyway, DickyPicks.com is my Oscar predictions and all that.
Great.
That's kind of beautiful that the porn filters... Yeah, the last two letters of your first name is my.
Yeah.
And the first four letters of your last name?
Are Dick.
Dick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that filter can't tell.
No. They should know that that's my name.
You could always, like, pull your phone off the Wi-Fi and just use the circuits of the cellular and show the kids the website.
Oh, that's true. Hotspot off my phone or whatever. No, that's fine.
No, I'm sure they. If you were running a porn site, you'd be too wealthy to teach.
Right. That's a good point. Oh, that's an idea, actually. Okay.
The perfect first porno. No, so
the perfect first porno.
Oh, my God.
All right, well, I'll go on the closing spiel and get us out of here.
All right.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. This is the Discover Indie Film Podcast. So the first thing I'm supposed to ask is like, subscribe, review, be kind. We live in a trolley little culture now, and everyone just... see something they don't like and they shit on it. If you enjoyed listening to this, take like the 30 seconds it takes to like and subscribe if you can.
I personally love the trolls. I say bring it on. That's just like I get a lot of enjoyment out of reading the hate. And I think it's like often pretty entertaining to read those hate comments of people saying like, I hate this editing or you're such a piece of shit or whatever. It's like, man, at least they're letting it out.
You would love my first TikTok post, which was my review of Spider-Man, the No Way Home.
Oh.
Last year, I gave it a B.
Uh-huh.
And literally like 15 comments of like, this is the worst take I've seen in all my like 18 years of watching movies. I'm like,
for some reason, the comic book people teenager. Are like, crazy defensive about their magnum, world that they live in. I'm not sure why the comic book characters deserve that much defensiveness from
seriously.
The fans. But like, they're not real people, like they're like comic book characters.
Hateful.
But people are obsessed.
And my addendum to the anti-trollism is, troll the fuck out of Hollywood. Troll the fuck out of things with a budget of $200 million or more.
Right.
But I've seen indie films that I love, And then people go on like IMDb or Amazon and say, this film was so bad because they didn't have a big budget. And I'm like, you're criticizing someone who made a feature 90-minute film for $10,000 and they were creative and used cardboard cutouts for extras. And you're insulting that's that instead genius. Of looking at them as creative.
Yeah, that's genius.
So
haters gotta hate.
I'd love creative solutions to obstacles. That is what I always like loved about the theater. And I like to bring that to film. I love that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm failing at wrapping us up, though. So if you want to learn more about this podcast or that TV series on Amazon Prime Video that I barely mentioned, that's also called Discover Indie Film. It was born out of the podcast because everyone on this podcast who made a feature was on streaming and everyone who made a short pretty much was not. So we put together, I asked 20 people, hey, you want to put your shorts together and do a series? And they all said yes, and we got it onto Amazon. So season 7 just came out. I think Breyer's Cucumber Tostinos is in season 6, probably?
I think so. That sounds
season
right.
Season 6, yeah. So season 8 is coming. It's an all dance film season.
Oh, cool.
Because I was a guest programmer on at a dance film festival in the UK. And I said to the head programmer, I'm like, hey, you want to do a season of Discover Indie Film and you set up, you produce this, you give me the lineup, we'll just, and so yeah, someone else is doing all the work for season 8.
Nice.
And I love dance films. I I am the least coordinated person on earth. I'm beautiful on the tennis court and I am ugly on the dance floor. So when I watch people dance, it just, I get all like weepy. I'm lame. So anyway, so go to Amazon Prime Video, type in Discover Indie Film and go to, actually, just watch any season, but if you go to season 6, I'm 99% sure it's episode 1.
Yeah.
Because I always love to lead with the funniest of the funny.
Thank you.
That is Breyer's Cucumber Tostinos. So watch that. Who knows? Maybe season 9 will have the perfect first date if I, I'm just going to give these guys back rubs when we stop recording and talk about how nice it is to have your film on. You know, you like this in the shoulders. And by the way, your film be so nice with the other indie films in season 9.
Well, thank you for this perfect first massage.
You know, and all right. So that's it. And if you want to learn more, discoverindiefilm.com. And it's at DIF Wins on social media. The Perfect First Date cleaned up all those awards at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November, and you can learn more at ShermanOaksFF.com, and it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. There is a sister festival every June called Film Invasion Los Angeles. You can learn about that sucker at FilmInvasionLA.com, and it's at FilmInvasionLA on social media. I should mention that both festivals are ranked in the top 100 best reviewed worldwide out of 12,000 film festivals worldwide. Somehow these two are both in the top 100 best reviewed because as I like to joke, we're the festivals that give a shit. So anyway, I think we're good. I think we're good.
Great.
Thanks you.
Chris Hall, Tommy Dickey, thank you both. And thank you everyone for listening.
Bye.